for the State of the State Address, sometimes known as the Presidential Report. I now turn it back over to our affiliate president for 11 years. I understand that's the longest, that he's the longest serving president that we've had in the history of that of this affiliate. And if I'm mistaken, somebody will invariably correct me, but I think that we are very fortunate. Okay, up on you go.
Thank you, Mike. I chose to change the name of this in the presidential report to the State of the State this year for several reasons, because I think that's really what it is. You'll notice in the agenda later that Dr. Maurer will be presenting what I've decided to call the State of the Union Address. That came to me because last year, on July 2nd, at our national convention, I spent most of our opening day through the roll call. I think he came in the C's or D's or E's. He came very early in the roll call. Congressman Ed Towns from Brooklyn was sitting next to me in our delegation for most of the day and asking lots of questions, as anyone would on their first time at a national convention. And so we went and had lunch, and we chatted some more, and we talked about the legislation that he's introduced into Congress. And we had a pretty good lunch, myself and John Perret and Mindy and a few others. And we came back at 2 o'clock, and Dr. Maurer was presenting the presidential report. And the congressman said to me, "Now, what's happening here? What is he talking about? What is he doing?" And I said, "Well, actually, in terms that you would understand, sir, having the job you have for the last 25 years, he's doing our State of the Union address." And it clicked in his head, you know, because that's what he does every year. He shows up and listens to a speech about the State of the Union. And in effect, I really do think that Dr. Maurer's presidential report is the State of the Union. And our union, as we heard from Dr. Maurer, is strong, alive, and well. And I'd like to start off this report by saying the State of the State is alive and well, and we are growing, and we have never been better off in our history. Last year, I spoke to you about the stairway, climbing the stairway, and referenced a few passages from Dr. Jernigan's 1979 banquet address. That's how it is at the top of the stairs. And I think it's just as true today. I think we're still on the stairway, but we're still climbing the stairway, and we've got our arms locked. Many things have gone on through the legislature. Many things have gone on in public. Many things have gone on privately with individual people in this affiliate that says we are still on the climb up the stairway. This year, for the first time back in January, the executive board met. The executive board was a creation largely of through our inspiration of the legislature, of then Lieutenant Governor Patterson, and he helped shepherd it through the legislature. The thing almost died in the legislative process, but during the negotiations, Senator George Maziarz, who we'll hear from later, introduced an amendment to that bill that created the executive board. So when Senator Maziarz comes, I will thank him, but I'd like you to show your appreciation to the senator as well, because without him, we wouldn't have a board overseeing all the affairs of the blind in this state, not just the rehab agency, but all affairs of the blind, and constituted with a majority of blind membership. Incidentally, I think we have at least 6, maybe 7 members of that board in attendance again at this convention. And the board is co-chaired by one of our own, Charlie Richardson. And so we continue on through the legislature with things that we have decided are important. And what's important to us, and what has been important to us, and will continue to be important to us until we see it done, are Newsline funding and quiet cars. We will see them through. Quiet cars, if we need to explain them, we can do that later. But quiet cars pose a clear and present danger to blind people. There is federal legislation And we now have state legislation that was introduced by Assemblymember Joan Millman and Senator Charles Fischillo that would do just what the federal bill does. We had a good traction on that bill, and there's a lot of co-sponsorship to that bill. However, there's another organization of blind people that went to the legislature and said, this isn't a state matter. This is a federal matter. We shouldn't do a bill like this. And all of a sudden, our legislators were scratching their heads. And it got delayed, and the chair of the committee is from Rochester, and Rochester has a pretty good influence from the other organization and is the seat of one of the more regressive agencies in the state. If you're listening in Rochester, you're not that far away. So that bill never made it out of committee. The sponsors of the bill have told us they will be reintroducing the bill, and we will see it get through this coming year. As well as our Newsline funding bill. Newsline is important. Is there anyone in this audience who doesn't know about Newsline? There you go. Now you know why it's that important to us. With the budget cuts around the country and the fiscal crises that most states are facing based on the economy, it's going to be a heavy lift to get this done. However, the method that we are proposing is not going to cost the taxpayer any more money than it already is costing. So we can explain that at another time, but that is a no-cost bill to the taxpayer. So we need to help that get that through to continue the existence of Newsline and through that legislation promote its growth. We have recently entered into relationships with the Consumer Protection Board in the state here, the first state agency to come on board with us in a serious way. They've paid money to come on board to cover some of the costs of Newsline. And as a result, we post things, consumer alerts that would come out in your mail or in the newspaper from the Consumer Protection Board, identity theft, product recall, dangers of particular consumer products. So I recommend the option two feature on Newsline to you. Check that periodically because it's always being updated. At least every week or two it's being updated as they send new reports to us. So keep looking. The other couple of things that we will be reporting on and focusing on is the expansion of the Randolph Shepherd Program. We talked about that at breakfast this morning. The good news in the Randolph Shepherd Program is that it's full. It's full. Every facility is staffed by a blind person. The bad news in Randolph Shepherd is it's full. Every job is staffed by a blind person. There are plenty of blind people still looking to enter the program. There are good opportunities. It's a good enough opportunity that it can even take you to retirement, folks. You can see your way clear to buy houses and cars and boats and take you through to retirement. But we need to expand that program, and the legislation being offered in the New York legislature by Assemblyman Harvey Wiesenberg and Senator Martin Golden will do just that. It will expand this program. And we also are going to be focusing on a blind patient's bill of rights. We won't get papers anymore that say, sign this consent. Those consents will need to be in an accessible form before you sign it and find out what's going to be done to you. We will be working with the health committees to get those particular items done. So we are alive in the legislature. We are alive elsewhere in the state, too. We are alive when it comes to seeing that services are properly delivered. And these are times that cases come to us on a one-by-one basis that aren't always reported to us. The cases that come from parents that are brought to us, the cases that are told about children not getting the appropriate services, the cases that come from recipients of CBVH services where they're not getting the appropriate services they deliver. We simply act and step in on their behalf, and together with the consumer, get those services that they are owed, and get the school district or the Commission for the Blind to do the right thing. It happens almost every other week. We get calls in the office all the time for inquiry, 15, 20 calls a week from people just asking the simplest question as to where can I buy a slate, where can I buy a this or a that, to my kid needs Braille and they won't give it to him. We will deal with all those things. We also get calls, believe it or not, from people, and you don't think these cases exist anymore. We get calls from people who are being denied custody of their children because they're blind. The simplest, no-brainer in my mind, you had a kid, raise your kid, but not in some judges' minds. Because you're blind, it disqualifies you. These cases come to our attention, and we won't put up with that any longer. We never put up with it in the past, and we won't continue to put up with it. We had a case in the northeastern corner of the state. Many of you know her. Because of an act of God, and by that I mean snow, Shelley Bamrick can't be with us today. But Shelley was gave us a call, and she was in danger of being denied custody of her son because of her blindness, only because of her blindness. And we began the process of intervening in that case and to provide witnesses and provide testimony on Shelley's behalf. And we were prepared to go behind God's back to whatever town that is in Albany, and north, really north of Albany, guys. It is that high up. At any rate, we were prepared to go to that county to testify on Shelley's behalf. It was going to cost some money to go there, and we were a little shy on money. And I called Dr. Maurer and said, can you help us out with transportation? He said, how much do you need? I told him, and he said, it's on the way. So the combination of our national and state organizations will not tolerate the denial of rights to our blind parents. The follow-up on that story is, while we were preparing to travel, a settlement was reached in that case that Shelley was agreeable to, and as a result, we didn't have to go. But if the settlement falls apart and Shelley needs help again, we'll be there. You all heard about the movie Blindness, and I just want to thank you all. Those are things that happen through the course of the year that affect us all in a negative sort of way. We made the news again. Again, we made the news. In New York City, on the NBC affiliate, they filmed the protest that the chapter and some folks from the Long Island came in to participate in. And the movie Blindness, I'm told now, is down to about 20 or 30 theaters nationwide. Keep they're going in the right direction. We had no idea how many things to print up, so when the time came to print up literature to hand out, I printed a whole bunch of literature, and a few folks said to me, I don't know if we're going to give all those out. I said, I don't know either, but let's take this box full of stuff over there and stand on 23rd Street in Manhattan and see who we can scare up in front of that theater. I went out and got a bullhorn, too. It felt like the 60s all over again. And we stood out in front of that theater and informed people in no uncertain terms what we thought about the movie. And that literature, we were in front of that theater from 6 to 8 that evening to catch people coming out and going in to that show. And about 7:30, somebody said, do we have any more literature? It was all gone. And we still had another half hour to go, and that was fine. We just talked to people for the next half hour. Well, we must have contacted through our literature and face-to-face contact and discussion several thousand people, literally, on the streets of Manhattan that evening. And only one or two people told us we were out of our minds. Most people thought that we made sense, and they frankly said, I never thought of that before. I think if I were blind, I'd probably feel the way you folks do. We made the point again, and I just need to thank everybody who was out on the street with us, because you can't pull off a demonstration as one person. So as a collective body, we kept our arms locked and climbed those stairs together. We will achieve that first-class citizenship. We will also serve to keep track of programs for the blind that will occur throughout the state and things that people call innovative. I got wind of a program that the Commission for the Blind is planning to implement, and they're calling it a mentoring program. They sound like they invented mentoring. Folks, hello over there in Albany. We've been mentoring before you were born. There was a mentoring program that was created by several of our members back in the mid-90s using as a vehicle the Randolph Shepherd program. And at one point during one summer, it was touching between 75 and 100 young high school blind kids around the state, particularly in the New York City area, but it was touching using other cities as well. And it grew to a point where the private agency said, hey, this looks good. Give it over here to us. There's money in that program. Because the commission at the time was paying people to do this, paying people to participate. We were selecting the appropriate people to inspire our young people. And they were being paid to do this, and they were doing an excellent job, because what is being found now is that the young people who came through in those days are hitting college and the job market, ready for the college and the job market, and not wondering why, if they have direction and wondering where they should go. Mentoring works if you get it done right, get it done by the right people in the right time. And the commission in those days, under the direction, under the leadership of former Associate Commissioner Tom Robertson, saw that value and allocated the funds to the program. I learned that the commission is going to start another mentoring program, and it's going to get some blind people to do the same thing that was done. And the commission said what it thought of the program by its decision to not allocate funds to that program. They want you to do it for free. We'll do it for free. But I don't think we need to do it through the commission's program, because the commission has already said what it thinks of it. In this society, we allocate funds based on what we think of something. You put your money, usually as a person, where your mouth is. You donate to your religious organizations, to your civic organizations, to your kids or whatever, based on what you think of them and where your dedication is to them. And that's where you allocate your money. The commission today, currently, is not allocating funds to mentors. I think that's what it thinks of the program. In terms of mentoring also, there were years that the commission would sponsor an experience for young people who would agree and were offered the opportunity to visit the National Center in Baltimore. We used to do that every President's Week for a good 6, 7, 8 years. We would visit the National Center, expose the young people here in New York to things they would never be exposed to in an institutional way. One by one, we could expose them to it, but on a large scale, they were never exposed to positive attitudes, positive philosophy, and positive approaches to their own blindness. They were exposed to that in Baltimore, and it challenged some attitudes, and it challenged some thinking. Every year that we went, it would challenge that thinking. And every year, these young people would come back, and after a time would say, you know, some of that stuff made sense. And I thought about what you guys said 6 months ago, and I think that made some sense. We planted seeds every year with young people. Last year, somebody complained about the program, and the current administration saw the opportunity to scuttle that trip. So they did. They blamed it on fiscal constraints, but they also sent some note charging some improprieties by either those of us from New York or those members of the staff in Baltimore. They never were specific what those charges were. Dr. Maurer wrote and asked what those charges were. I asked what those charges were. I have not received a satisfactory reply, and I don't believe Dr. Maurer has, or he would have shared it with me. There has been no satisfactory reply coming from the commission up to this point, and I would simply request that if the commission is serious about choice and not just talks about choice in its rehab, that they once again offer the choice to young people to get a positive approach to blindness that they will not get in New York. The reason I ask that is because they substituted our experience with a President's Week at a vacation camp for the blind, where my counterpart from the other organization was featured and his people were featured. So they had their ACB week. Folks used to refer to this as the NFB week, and maybe it was. If there's going to be an ACB week or going to be an NFB week, let's have choice, folks. Let's have choice. Scuttle them both or support them both, but we won't put up with only one choice in our state, because everybody talks about choice, including the commission. Now let's see how serious the commission is. We are on that stairway. We are sometimes the watchdogs. We are sometimes the providers. There are those of us who get accused of being providers of service. Well, who better to provide service than people who know what the service ought to be like? So we will provide those services when we need to. We will also keep ourselves locked in arms as we climb those stairs together, slowly but surely, to first-class citizenship. In order to do that, we have to lock arms with each other and climb those stairs together. And I want to thank people in this organization for giving me a really good team to work with in the persons of Julie and Ray, Mike and Mindy. Those are the people whose arms I need to hold on to so I don't slip down the stairs. And I want to thank you folks for giving me that team. Ray was right. I looked at the history. Today we have the opportunity of hearing from the two longest-serving presidents in our respective organizations. Dr. Maurer has been president of our national organization for 22 years. I have been president of this organization for 11. Just for those of you who are history-bound, Dominic DeJohn, it was 8 years. So I thought 11 was bigger than 8, so I guess that was me. But Dominic had 8 years. And a one-year fill-in there after a death, so that made 9 for Dominic. And he appreciated you, Laura. Dominic did. Yes, he did. But having said that, it's an honor that I don't take lightly, and honors are usually received humbly, but at the same time, the mammoth responsibility you've given me is not taken lightly. This is an organization that I have been an officer of, not necessarily the president, but been an officer of this organization now for 19 years in one way or another. And we have experienced some terrific growth through the 90s and the early part of this century. I've watched us grow. The growing pains are always there, but the progress is always there, too. We're further up the ladder, further up to the flight of stairs than we have been in the past. The Federation in New York today is better, stronger, and more together than it's been in 20 years. We need to continue that path up the stairs and keep the arms locked. I keep my arms locked with those on the executive committee and keep our arms locked with each other out there in the audience and in the membership. It is easy to say the past is our history, the present is our reality, the future is our responsibility. We can see to that by keeping our arms locked and moving forward with each other up the ladder. Thank you very much, folks.